Oikos presents 15 Seconds of Strength.
Here we go. Steve's got a trunk full of groceries and no one to help him.
Oh, that's tough, Jim. Looks like a 5-trip load at least.
He grabs the first bag, the second. Bob, it looks like he's trying to do it all one trip. He shimmies the door open, steps over the dog. Oh, and he stumbles.
Oh, right into the kitchen without missing a beat. Mm. Jim, now that's a man who eats his protein-packed Oikos.
With 15 grams of complete protein in each cup, Oikos Triple Zero can help build strength for every day. Oikos, stronger makes everything better.
The city never slept. And as a police officer, neither did I. Streets bathed in a sickly yellow hue from the overhead lamps, the sound of distant chatter, and the ever-present hum of the cars. This was the soundtrack to my life. Every alleyway had its secrets, every face a story. One particularly cold evening, my partner, Greg, and I were called in to investigate an old warehouse in the midst of being demolished. The crew had discovered a box filled with old reel-to-reel audio tapes and equipment. Normally, such a find wouldn't be a concern for the police, but one of the workers, curious about the contents, played a tape and immediately wished he hadn't. The voice on the tape was shaky, filled with palpable fear.
June 3rd, 1982. I fear this might be my last recording. To whoever finds this, listen, and you might save a life. Perhaps even your own.
The tape went silent for a moment, a dense void of anticipation. Then, sounds, distorted and troubling, filtered through. Whispers, agonizing cries, a melody played backwards, and a name. My name.
Officer Mitchell Harrison. Why didn't you listen?
Followed by sounds that froze the marrow in my bones. My own scream.
Turn that thing off! I barked. My voice echoed louder than I intended.
Greg, looking ashen, switched off the equipment.
Mitch, what the hell was that?
I shrugged, unwilling to admit how much it disturbed me.
Let's catalog everything and move out. It's probably just some kind of sick joke.
However, as the days passed, my bravado melted away. I couldn't escape the feeling of being watched. Every reflection in shop windows seemed tinged with shadow. Every voice whispering my name. My world was unraveling. I decided to play detective in my own life. Diving into the tapes, I discovered they were recordings made over decades. The earliest dated back to the late 40s. Each one contained warnings, dates, names. More disturbingly, those names were of police officers. And each one of those officers had met grisly ends. The modus operandi was always the same. The victim would hear their name whispered, their own voice screaming. And then, within 3 days, meet a death that mirrored the horror in the recording. Was this some kind of macabre prophecy? Or was someone making these deaths a reality? Whatever it was, I had just 2 days left. With fear gnawing at my bones, I decided to turn to Greg, my trusted partner, for help. It felt like admitting defeat. Acknowledging the possibility that this absurd recording could be more than just a ghastly prank. But I needed his practical, level-headed thinking. In the gloomy confines of my apartment, I told him. As I talked, I watched him. His eyes never left mine, his face stoic. Yet I could see the gears turning in his head. When I finished, there was a long silence. Then he let out a sigh, raking his fingers through his hair.
Mitch, that sounds like something out of a horror movie. But I know you. You wouldn't make this up.
I showed him the list of names I had found in the tapes, along with their corresponding obituaries. His eyes widened.
This is...
He didn't finish his sentence. He didn't need to. We resolved to finding out the origin of the tapes. We decided to return to the warehouse, to the room where the recordings were found. hoping it might offer some clues. The night was at its darkest when we arrived, a cloak of blackness broken out by the sparse stars overhead. The towering edifice of the warehouse loomed, an impenetrable fortress of forgotten tales. We navigated through the skeletal remains of the abandoned building, our flashlights piercing the heavy darkness. As we entered the room where the tapes were found, an uncanny stillness greeted us. There, in the corner, was the space where the box of tapes had been. Now, a gaping void. It was Greg who noticed the wall behind it first. Carved into the cracked plaster were dates, names, a chilling echo of the tapes. My blood ran cold as I noticed my name etched alongside today's date.
Mitch.
Greg's voice was barely a whisper, the word suspended in the stale air.
We need to get you to safety.
In that shadow-drenched room, we made a pact. Greg would research the previous victims while I would stay locked in my apartment, hoping to outwit whatever fates the tapes prophesized. It was a plan born of desperation, but it was all we had. And as the first light of dawn crept into the sky, I couldn't shake the feeling that time was running out. We spent the morning sequestered in my apartment, the tension heavy as we drank stale coffee and scanned through archived news reports, trying to draw parallels between the deceased officers and my predicament. Greg was as dependable as a rock, his focus unwavering despite the bizarre circumstances. I envied his composure. As the daylight ebbed away, my unease escalated, every tick of the clock sounding like a death knell. Late in the afternoon, a breakthrough emerged. Greg found a peculiar connection. All the previous victims were involved in an unsolved case dating back to the 1940s. A case centered around an elusive serial killer who sent police recordings preceding his victims' deaths. The victims were not his targets. The police officers were.
Mitch, this can't be a coincidence,
Greg said, his eyes wide with revelation.
The person behind the 1940s case, he might be connected to these tapes.
Suddenly, everything fell into a gruesome pattern. This wasn't about me. It was about a phantom from the past, a macabre puppeteer pulling the strings from the shadows. But why? What was his motive? A sudden knock at the door interrupted our speculations. A thin, shaking man stood in the hallway, clutching an old tape recorder.
Officer Harrison,
he croaked.
You don't know me, but I know you. We have a common acquaintance.
His words sent a chill down my spine. He introduced himself as Edward Miller, a former sound engineer from a local radio station. He claims to have met...
Oikos presents 15 Seconds of Strength.
Here we go. Steve's got a trunk full of groceries and no one to help him.
Oh, that's tough, Jim. Looks like a 5-trip load at least.
He grabs the first bag, the second. Bob, it looks like he's trying to do it all one trip. He shimmies the door open, steps over the dog. Oh, and he stumbles.
Oh, right into the kitchen without missing a beat. Mm. Jim, now that's a man who eats his protein-packed Oikos.
With 15 grams of complete protein in each cup, Oikos Triple Zero can help build strength for every day. Oikos, stronger makes everything better.
How does PwC take your company to the leading edge? We bring the sharpest minds in tech to your team, so you can bring the ideas that will transform your business. We are passionate about your industry, so you can walk into any room with every advantage. We're with you every step of the way, so you can know you're headed in the right direction. At PwC, we build for what's next, so you can get there now. Let's get started at pwc.com/us/leading edge.
It's the man behind the recordings decades ago.
He was a regular at the station,
Edward said, his voice a dry whisper.
Said he had a voice for radio. Then he disappeared. A few months later, the police officer's deaths began.
With trembling hands, he offered the recorder.
He left this for you,
he said.
Said you'd know what to do.
As I pressed play, the familiar, spine-chilling voice filled the room.
Hello? Officer Harrison. The clock's ticking. Will you play my game?
A shudder ran through me. The game had just begun, and time was my greatest enemy. Over the next few days, our lives became a blur of cryptic messages and unsolved riddles. Each tape brought a new challenge, a test set by our puppeteer. With each passing hour, my impending doom felt more palpable. My future rested in the hands of a long-dead murderer. Edward stayed with us. His knowledge of the puppeteer and experience with audio recordings were invaluable. His past involvement weighed heavily on him. I could see it in his drooping shoulders, the remorse in his eyes. He was determined to set things right, for himself, and for all the victims. As we navigated through the labyrinth of clues, I couldn't help but feel an unsettling admiration for our puppeteer. His mind was a masterpiece of malevolence, each riddle carefully crafted, the solutions buried beneath layers of wordplay and deception. One evening, after hours of exhausting research, we hit a wall. The latest tape was incomprehensible, a garbled mess of sounds. Frustration bubbled within me, my patience fraying. Edward, however, was unperturbed.
"This is a sound puzzle," he said with a quiet determination. "We need to unlock the hidden message."
Hours turned into a race against time as we worked on decoding the puzzle. The apartment became our command center, papers and tapes strewn across every available surface. It was Greg who cracked the code, a triumphant gleam in his tired eyes.
"It's a location," he revealed, pointing to a map,
his fingers resting on an abandoned broadcast station on the outskirts of town.
"We need to get there, now."
As we geared up, the magnitude of our discovery sunk in. The puppeteer's lair, a place shrouded in mystery, was within our reach. Was this a step towards survival, or a dance with death? Only time would tell. The abandoned broadcast station was a husk of its former glory, a dilapidated relic against the moonlit sky. We approached with caution, the silence of the night punctuated by the crunch of our boots on gravel. Inside the building was a crypt of dust-laden equipment and forgotten memories. The air was thick with a musty smell, time having claimed its domain here. As we ventured deeper, the darkened hallways seemed to close in on us, shadows weaving their chilling tales. Edward led us to a room at the end of the hall, the former recording studio. The equipment was ancient, yet intact. Edward went to work, his fingers deftly moving across the dials and switches. From the old speakers, a recording blared. The puppeteer's voice echoed in the room, a haunting lullaby of my impending doom.
"But Officer Harrison,"
the voice crooned,
"your time is running out. Tick-tock, tick-tock."
I felt a cold sweat prickling at the nape of my neck. How was he always one step ahead? How did he know we were here? Then, something caught my eye. A dusty mirror hung on the opposite wall, reflecting our huddled group. But something was off. In the reflection, the room appeared different. Behind us, where there should have been a wall, a hidden doorway was revealed. With a collective breath, we turned. There it was, the doorway artfully hidden within the ornate designs of the wallpaper. Beyond it, a staircase spiraled downwards into the unknown. With determination gnawing at our fear, we descended into the puppeteer's lair, unaware of the grim revelations that awaited us. Descending the staircase, we were plunged into a world of stifling darkness and eerie quiet. It felt as though we were moving away from reality, our senses reduced to the singular act of putting one foot in front of the other. The basement was a shrine to death, a grotesque monument of meticulous planning and execution. Photographs and newspaper clippings of deceased officers adorned the walls, my picture the latest addition. In the center was an antiquated broadcasting unit, similar to the one upstairs. The chilling revelation that this was where the puppeteer had made his deathly predictions sent a shiver down my spine. This was where my death sentence was proclaimed. Greg found a set of tapes on a desk, untouched by time. As he loaded the first tape, I held my breath, bracing for the eerie, familiar voice. But what we heard instead was a different kind of horror. A chilling orchestration of shrieks and pleas echoed through the room. The voices of the puppeteer's past victims, crying out in their final moments. Among the cacophony, a constant monologue played out, a deep voice relishing in the macabre spectacle. And then, amidst the terror, a revelation struck me. The voice in the recording wasn't the puppeteer's. It was Edward's. I turned to confront Edward, a sinking feeling in my stomach. But Edward was already looking at me, a sad smile on his face.
"I'm sorry, Mitch," he said. "I've always been sorry."
As the room spun around me, the pieces fell into place. Edward wasn't here to help me. He was the puppeteer, the architect of my impending doom, and I had led him right to the heart of his theater of death. The room morphed.
Oikos presents 15 Seconds of Strength.
Here we go. Steve's got a trunk full of groceries and no one to help him.
Oh, that's tough, Jim. Looks like a 5-trip load at least.
He grabs the first bag, the second. Bob, it looks like he's trying to do it all one trip. He shimmies the door open, steps over the dog. Oh, and he stumbles.
Oh, right into the kitchen without missing a beat. Mm. Jim, now that's a man who eats his protein-packed Oikos.
With 15 grams of complete protein in each cup, Oikos Triple Zero can help build strength for every day. Oikos, stronger makes everything better.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle.
With ultra-titanium alloy metal.
You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water.
But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Into a chilling stage. Edward's confession echoing ominously. Betrayal knotted in my stomach. Rage clawing at my insides. The man I had trusted, who I thought was a victim, was the puppeteer all along. He was the harbinger of my death. Edward's eyes bore into me, carrying a mixture of regrets and a strange form of satisfaction. As if, after a long time, he had come to terms with his sins, ready to face them.
Why?
The question barely made it past my lips. Edward sighed, a faraway look in his eyes.
"I didn't choose to be the puppeteer," he said. "It chose me. It's a curse. A voice inside my head, commanding me."
His confession unfurled a twisted tale. Edward had been suffering from a rare, undiagnosed mental condition, resulting in auditory hallucinations. These voices dictated his actions, including his deadly hobby. He'd tried to fight, tried to silence the voices, but they always won. Edward had recorded his death predictions in a twisted ritual of penance. Every recording was a desperate plea for him, an attempt to unmask the puppeteer within him. "But why me?" I demanded.
"I don't choose the victims, Mitch," Edward replied. "The voices do." Suddenly, Edward doubled over, his face contorting in pain, his fingers clutching at his temples, a grimace etched on his face. "Edward..." Greg moved towards him, but Edward waved him off. "The voice," he gasped. "It's here. It's saying your death can be avoided."
As the cryptic message hung in the air, a chilling realization washed over us. There was a way to cheat death, to turn the tables on the puppeteer. But what was it? And were we ready to face the consequences? Edward's revelation opened a gateway to hope. If there was a way to circumvent my preordained death, I was more than willing to take it. But how? Edward's confession continued. The puppeteer, the voice in his head, was like a ruthless fortune teller. Its predictions came true, yes, but it was also a meticulous planner. The deaths it predicted weren't inevitable. They were calculated, set in motion by its commands. If we could understand the sequence of events it had planned, we could disrupt it. But the voice wasn't going to make it easy. Its plan was a riddle, and solving it was our only chance. Edward played a new tape. The puppeteer's voice came on, distorted and warped.
"The officer's doom is a string that winds. When it snaps, the final hour chimes. Unravel the string, beat the time. Only then will you disrupt my rhyme."
The riddle twisted my mind into knots. We spent the next hour trying to decipher it, throwing wild theories into the air, but nothing fit. The frustration was mounting. Time was slipping away. And with each passing second, the puppeteer's prophecy was inching closer to reality. Then, a thought struck me. The string the puppeteer referred to could be a series of events leading to my death. If we could identify and unravel this string, we might stand a chance. With a renewed sense of purpose, we went back to the tapes. We listened to every death prediction Edward had made, searching for a pattern, a common thread that could give us a clue. As the dawn broke, our relentless efforts bore fruit. Each victim had received a personal item before their death, a memento of sorts, an integral part of the puppeteer's deadly scheme. And I had received one too, the ominous cassette tape. With this revelation, a plan began to form. We would confront the puppeteer head on, but this time, we had the upper hand. We would use its deadly game against it, and we would win. I was no longer just a player in this twisted game. I was becoming its master. As morning painted the world in hues of gold, our course was set. We would meet this monstrous puppeteer head on. The fight, however, was far from over. With each revelation, the puppeteer's true nature unveiled itself. Manipulative, meticulous, and dangerously intelligent. We needed to stay a step ahead. The first task was to figure out the connection between the received items and the victim's deaths. My cassette tape bore my death prediction, yes, but there had to be more to it. Each item must serve a purpose in the grand design, a gear in the puppeteer's lethal machine. Turning the tape over in my hands, I noticed a small inscription that hadn't caught my attention before. A series of numbers. I recognized it immediately. A case number from our precinct. This case was from a year ago. An unsolved murder that still haunted us. Was this the thread the puppeteer had woven? I quickly relayed my discovery to Edward and Greg. Their eyes widened in realization, mirroring my own horror. The puppeteer was not just predicting deaths. It was orchestrating them, using old, unsolved cases to leave us floundering while it set the trap. Armed with this new understanding, we delved into the case file. The victim had been a young woman, her body discovered in an old warehouse. The crime scene had yielded little evidence, and the case had soon gone cold. I knew what I had to do. The puppeteer wanted me at that warehouse, and I would go. But not as a lamb to the slaughter. I was walking into the lion's den. But this time, the lion was the one being hunted. The determination fueled my steps as we ascended from the basement, leaving the puppeteer's lair behind. The sun was rising, and so were my chances of escaping the puppeteer's deadly puppet show. The game was far from over, but for the first time, I had hope. Time was not my enemy anymore. It was my ally, and together we would fight. The puppeteer's clock was ticking, but I was the one setting the pace now, and I intended to win. As we drove towards the warehouse, I could feel the tension knotted in the air, tightening with each passing second. Edwards sat in the back, his face pale, his body trembling as the puppeteer's voice screamed in his head. Greg's grip on the steering wheel was a white-knuckle stranglehold. And me, I had a mission. To confront the puppeteer's plot head-on.
Oikos presents 15 Seconds of Strength.
Here we go. Steve's got a trunk full of groceries and no one to help him.
Oh, that's tough, Jim. Looks like a 5-trip load at least.
He grabs the first bag, the second. Bob, it looks like he's trying to do it all one trip. He shimmies the door open, steps over the dog. Oh, and he stumbles.
Oh, right into the kitchen without missing a beat. Mm. Jim, now that's a man who eats his protein-packed Oikos.
With 15 grams of complete protein in each cup, Oikos Triple Zero can help build strength for every day.
Oikos, stronger makes everything better.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. June is Men's Mental Health Month, and every year, 6 million men suffer from depression. If you're feeling overwhelmed, the strongest thing you can do is ask for help. And BetterHelp makes it easy. Take a short online quiz and connect from home with a qualified therapist. Visit BetterHelp.com to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
To defeat this phantom from within Edward's mind. The warehouse loomed ahead, a grim relic from the city's forgotten past. Its vast, decaying structure was shrouded in the morning mist, a somber monument to my impending doom, or maybe my salvation. As we stepped inside, a sense of deja vu washed over me. I had been here before, investigating the woman's murder. But this time, it felt different. Every shadow seems to whisper, every gust of wind seems to warn, and every heartbeat echoed the puppeteer's cruel laugh. We combed through the warehouse, searching for any clue, any sign that might point us to the puppeteer's plan. Hours passed. Our efforts seemed futile. Frustration bubbled beneath the surface. Time was slipping away. Then, Edward found it. A hidden room concealed behind a rotting pile of wooden crates. Inside, a chilling sight awaited us. Photos of all the puppeteer's victims were arranged on the wall, each marked with a date. The date of their death. My photo was there, too. Underneath, a blank space where the date should be. The puppeteer's twisted sense of humor. My death was imminent. Yet undecided. In the room's corner, a small table held another tape recorder. With bated breath, I pressed play. The puppeteer's voice, now so familiar, filled the room.
Welcome, officer. Are you ready to face your destiny?
The tape ended, leaving a chilling silence in its wake. I was on the puppeteer's stage now, and it was time for the final act. The chill of the puppeteer's voice still lingered in the air as we regrouped, absorbing the gravity of the situation. The eerie silence of the hidden room amplified my racing heartbeat, each thud echoing my impending mortality. I glanced at Edward,
His face was ashen, eyes wide with fear and concern. He couldn't control the puppeteer, but he was here, standing with me in defiance, a kindred spirit in this dance macabre. Next, my gaze fell on Greg. His stalwart presence was a rock amidst the storm, a tangible reminder that I wasn't in this fight alone. His grip on his service weapon was firm, ready to face whatever horror the puppeteer might unleash. Finally, I glanced at my own reflection in a cracked mirror, the marionette who was attempting to cut his strings. I was trapped in the puppeteer's twisted show, yes, but the play was far from over. The next step was clear. We had to provoke the puppeteer into revealing its hand. I turned to Edward. "Make it talk," I instructed. Edward nodded, a haunted look in his eyes. He closed his eyes and started whispering, engaging with the voice in his head. Moments later, his eyes flew open.
"It wants you to listen to another recording," he said, pointing to a stack of tapes on the table.
I picked up the topmost tape, its surface cold and foreboding, placing it into the recorder. I steeled myself and hit play. The puppeteer's voice slithered through the speakers, cold and calculating.
"The officer's fate is a score to be played. One misstep, and the life will fade. Listen closely to the song of your end. Only then can you mend."
Another riddle, and this one held the key to my survival. It was time to solve this deadly puzzle and pull the strings from the puppeteer's grasp. The final act had begun, and the stakes had never been higher. It was time for the curtain call. It was time to rewrite my fate. The cryptic riddle reverberated around the room, each word seeping into the silence. "The officer's fate is a score to be played. One misstep, and the life will fade. Listen closely to the song of your end. Only then can you mend. A score to be played." The reference to music was unmistakable. But what could it mean? How could a song foretell my death? Then, it struck me. I had been looking at the puzzle all wrong. The puppeteer's game wasn't just about predicting death. It was about controlling it. And control in music came from the score, the set of written musical notations. The puppeteer was likening my life and death to a musical performance. "One misstep and the life will fade." The puppeteer was warning me against mistakes, against deviating from the written score. But the score was yet unknown to me. I needed to find it, understand it. "Listen closely to the song of your end." The song of my end. My death recording. The answer lay in my death recording. I had to listen to it, to interpret its hidden score. My mind raced as I inserted the tape containing my death recording into the recorder. As the horrifying sounds of my predicted demise filled the room, I listened closely, seeking the underlying score. Then it hit me. The background noise. It wasn't just static. It was a melody. A haunting tune concealed within the tape's white noise. I had found the puppeteer's score. "Now, only then can you mend." To survive, I needed to rewrite this score to change my destiny. But how? How could I alter a sound recording? It was time to outsmart the puppeteer. I had been playing its game so far, dancing to its deadly tune. But now, I had a score of my own. A lifeline that could pull me back from the precipice of death. Now, the game had truly begun. Armed with my newfound understanding, I delved into the morbid composition hidden within my death recording. Edward and Greg watched, their faces etched with a mixture of fear and hope. In the somber silence of the hidden room, my destiny was playing out. Each note echoed with my impending demise, but now I had a key to decipher its deadly riddle. A realization dawned on me. The melody was a warped version of an old song, an old police ballad, twisted to become a symphony of dread. The puppeteer's mastery was in manipulating the familiar, warping it into a vessel of terror. What if I could reverse engineer the process? Could I revert the melody, change the score? I remembered the audio editing software back at the precinct. I had used it.
Oikos presents 15 seconds of strength.
Here we go. Steve's got a trunk full of groceries and no one to help him.
Oh, that's tough, Jim. Looks like a 5-trip load at least.
He grabs the first bag, the second. Bob, it looks like he's trying to do it all in one trip. He shimmies the door open, steps over the dog. Oh, and he stumbles.
Oh, right into the kitchen without missing a beat. Mm. Jim, now that's a man who eats his protein-packed Oikos.
With 15 grams of complete protein in each cup, Oikos Triple Zero can help build strength for every day. Oikos, stronger makes everything better.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra-titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
...from minor audio enhancements during investigations, but never to defy a puppet's predicted death. We need to head back, I said, my voice firm. I saw the doubt flicker in Greg's eyes, but it quickly gave way to determination. He nodded. Edward, the troubled conduit, simply looked relieved. Back at the precinct, I secluded myself with the audio equipment, the melody of my supposed demise looping continuously. The room was bathed in the cold light of the monitors, the silence punctuated by the click-clack of the keyboard and the haunting tune. Hour by hour, I dissected the melody, picking apart the layers of distortion, reworking the warped score. Sweat trickled down my brow, my fingers flew across the keyboard, my heart echoed the ticking seconds. I was rewriting my destiny, each altered note a step away from the puppeteer's control. And then, as the first light of dawn broke through the window, I sat back. The warped melody had transformed. It was now the original, a simple, non-threatening police ballad. I had reshaped the puppeteer's score. As I played the new version, I felt a sense of calm wash over me. I was no longer a puppet dancing to the tune of a sinister puppeteer. I had seized control of my strings. The puppeteer's game was not over, but I had made the first move. The final showdown was approaching, and I was ready. The stage was set for the concluding act. I called Edward and Greg back into the precinct's audio lab. Their faces were etched with anticipation as I played them the reworked recording. The song, stripped of its horrific overlay, was harmless. A mere shadow of the former terror-inducing melody. I told them about my plan, my interpretation of the puppeteer's cryptic message. Their eyes widened as they began to understand the enormity of it all. This wasn't just a fight for survival. It was a challenge against the puppeteer's absolute control. They agreed to stand by my side, their resolve echoing my own. We played the modified song in all possible channels, over the police radio, online streaming platforms, citywide public address systems. As the new, harmless tune echoed throughout the city, a collective sigh of relief filled the air. It was as if the city itself had been under the puppeteer's spell and was now breaking free. Days turned into weeks, weeks into months. The puppeteer's game fell silent, its deadly grip loosening. The dread-filled anticipation of a new tape delivery vanished, replaced by an uneasy peace. I was still alive, still defying the puppeteer's prediction. The reworked melody had changed the score. And then, 1 year later, On the anniversary of my predicted death date, I found a parcel at my doorstep. My heart froze as I recognized the puppeteer's trademark wrapping. With shaking hands, I unwrapped it. Inside was a single tape, marked with today's date. I felt a chill creep up my spine. I rushed to my old tape recorder, apprehension drumming a nervous tattoo on my consciousness. As the tape rolled, I braced myself for the worst. The tape played an unfamiliar sound. It was not a melody or a death recording, but a voice. A deep, resonant voice, filled with an eerie calm. It was the puppeteer, speaking for the first time.
"You changed the score,"
it said.
"I miscalculated your ingenuity. The game was flawed, but it will not be next time. Until then, officer."
The tape ended with an ominous silence. My skin crawled with an unspoken threat. The puppeteer was gone, but not defeated. The game had merely paused. I had won this round, but the next one was looming, promising to be even deadlier. But I was not the same person I was a year ago. I was no longer a pawn in the puppeteer's game. I was a player, ready for the next round. The puppeteer may return, but I would be waiting. I had faced death and rewritten my destiny. The melody of my life was mine to compose, mine to play. It had been a long, terrifying journey, but in the end, it was the fear that made me stronger. It was the fear that gave me the courage to stand up, to fight back. The puppeteer's game had changed me, transformed me into a survivor, a fighter. I was Officer Nathan, the man who defies the puppeteer, the man who turns death recordings into a song of life.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Menards has what you need to beat the heat. From bottled water to air conditioners and fans, we have everything in stock to keep you from overheating. Patio umbrellas are simple but effective ways to cool down while outside. We also carry a wide assortment of sprinklers, pools, popsicles, and more to help keep the kids cool. Stock up and stay cool with help from Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. We carry the largest in-stock selection of Hunter ceiling fans. They provide consistent comfort all year round and also help reduce energy costs. Right now, save big on Hunter ceiling fans when you shop at Menards. View our entire selection of Hunter ceiling fans today on Menards.com. Plus, our weekly flyer with plenty more great deals happening now.
Save